try and snap an 11-game skid against the Giants. Dodgers mired in their longest losing streak since moving to Los Angeles. It's Johnny Cueto for San Francisco. NFL, ESPN's Adam Schefter reporting Cardinals running back David Johnson will have surgery on his dislocated left wrist this week and is expected to miss 2 to 3 months. Teams placing Johnson on IR, but with the chance to return. Arizona is re-signing running back Chris Johnson. He was released by the Cardinals on September 1st. A third Chicago starter landed on injured reserve. Linebacker Jarrell Freeman put on IR with a pectoral injury and a concussion. NBA, the Lakers will retire Kobe Bryant's numbers 8 and 24 jerseys before their December 18th game versus the Warriors. Danica Patrick announced she won't return to Stewart Haas Racing next season. She did not say where or if she will race in 2018.
Experience why for nearly a century men have trusted Barbasol for a close, comfortable shave. Whether it's extra moisturizing with vitamin E or soothing aloe, all you have to do is sit back and bask in the glory of your close shave. You're looking good, America. You're shaving with Barbasol.
Isn't this a sports show?
Back to sports!
Thank you, every caller.
Almost entirely.
Like, he is a bipartisan bleep talker. That's what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be known as a bipartisan bleep talker.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
I gain energy by talking. I'm a plant in that way. My photosynthesis isn't with sunlight, it's with attention. I am bacterial.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
You know they're probably not going to talk about on ESPN? Too many spider boys.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
People are about to destroy you on Twitter.
I know, I'm ready for it. Oh, but if you want to destroy me on Twitter, it's at JB Briscoe. Follow me, then destroy me.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Oh, last night. Last night was the perfect AFC West battle. Nobody really looked good. Then the Broncos started to look bad. And the Chargers found a new way to lose a game. Just tremendous. Just a tremendous cross-section of the AFC West last night. Welcome to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510.com, 99.3 FM, 1510 AM. You can search ESPN 1510 on the TuneIn app. Some days you can watch the show on Facebook. We're starting on time today because Facebook's not working. And Charlie, who's in today, made the executive decision to just start the show on time, and then he will try to make the Facebook work as we go. It's worth a shot. So that's our current work. That's today's work in progress. Eventually, we will. Oh, you know what? It doesn't look like the light's on. Oh, no, the light is on. Eventually, we'll have a system where the show will be at all these places at the same time consistently. But it's a work in progress. A lot of good things talked about today. We're going to talk about how the Chiefs have the two fastest players in Week 1. Kareem Hunt and Tyreek Hill, the things that both of them are doing in this offense and what we can expect from them going forward. We're going to talk about something mind-boggling about the division sign, the math thing. Bill O'Brien is continuing to make me absolutely damn crazy, booing Jamal Charles and also Ted Cruz like a porn tweet. But first, we have to start with what we saw last night on Monday Night Football. The Vikings and Saints game was fun. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the second game, obviously. AFC West after dark. I think you can take some pretty clear takeaways from what we saw from a Chiefs perspective, from an AFC West perspective. The Chargers looked like a mess. Melvin Gordon looked really good. But the Chargers looked like a mess, largely. Phillip Rivers got rattled quickly, which I know isn't bizarre or shocking, but it was a little bit... It felt like he was a little quick on the trigger for him throwing his hands up in the air yesterday. I love Phillip Rivers as a football player. I love watching Phillip Rivers. I imagine he would be a maddening guy to have be your team's quarterback, but I digress. And Trevor Siemian looked pretty good. Alex Smith and Jared Goff and Sam Bradford and Trevor Siemian all looked really good this week. Which I feel like if you're telling me that Alex Smith changed your opinion of him this week, you also have to be telling me that Jared Goff and Sam Bradford and Trevor Siemian changed your opinion of them also this week. Just to be, you know, even-handed about it. I think all those guys are certainly moving in the right direction, though. I'll be consistent. Insofar as discussing that, and Alex Smith faced the scariest opponent, so there's some good to be had there. Alex Smith also, of all those guys, does he have the best weapons? I would say so. That seems fair, right? Bradford was using Stephon Diggs and Dalvin Cook and Adam Thielen. White dude. But a downhill threat white dude, so that's short-circuiting all of our stereotypes. Trevor Siemian has two really good receivers. The running back position's a little sketchy. Good weapons there, though, also. Jared Goff has Sammy Watkins, and that's it. So, I digress, though. Those guys all had really good weeks. You can say what you want about that, but for the game specifically last night, the Chargers looked like a mess. Their play calling was so predictable that Rex Ryan knew what was about to happen, and that's not a good sign. And the Broncos looked about like I expected them to look. It wasn't a horrific team, and it wasn't a great team. Siemian was the most impressive part of it. He was the guy that was better than I thought he was going to be. He also, on one of those long touchdown drives, he threw a pick six at the beginning of it, but the Chargers guy just dropped it. So keeping all of that in mind, Trevor Siemian was better than I expected, far from flawless. But he was the most impressive thing on the field last night, frankly. He was the guy that exceeded the expectations the most. The Chargers just seemed like a mess. Again, the play calling was predictable. The offense was a mess. The defense was getting beaten by Trevor Siemian. Meh. So I think what we saw last night is one weekend, overreaction Tuesday here, but one weekend seems like the Chargers hype was a little bit overblown. And maybe the Broncos have a little bit better of a quarterback situation than we thought they would. Still, certainly the fourth best quarterback in the AFC West. Although somebody on Twitter said maybe the fifth, like at best the fifth, because I think Patrick Mahomes would be starting for the Broncos. Matt McGloin also might have a case to make. So whatever that means, Trevor Siemian looked better than I thought he was going to. But the Broncos offense did enough. The Chargers' defense looked porous. Again, their offense was predictable. Melvin Gordon looked really good, but wasn't doing anything to elevate that team to the next level. The Broncos almost give it up at the end. The Chargers tie it to go into overtime. The Broncos call the timeout to ice the kicker. Next kick is blocked. It's a very Chargers way to lose a football game. It's a very Broncos way to win one. It feels like the Broncos have that kind of thing happen four times a season. So, again, large-scale takeaways here. Chargers hype arrived at the station a little too early, that hype train. And the Broncos aren't going to be incompetent. I didn't think they would be. I think the Broncos are essentially who we thought they were. Also, that defense is not the same defense it was the last year or two. And we knew that also. We talked about that before the season. The Broncos' defense is not the defense you're used to seeing from them. And their offense is also worse. So they're taking steps backwards, but they'll be a competent team. Winning in Denver will be hard. The Chiefs will have a struggle in Denver, I'm sure. I'm also less worried about the Chiefs having to go to San Diego in... it's week three, right? I'm like 95% sure. It's definitely... It was Patriots, Eagles, Chargers in L.A. week three. I'm a little bit less concerned about that game. That was one of the games in the preseason. I'm like, oh, man, if I'm going to go win-loss through the schedule, I gave that game to the Chargers because I think winning on the road is hard. The Chiefs have been very, very good at winning on the road, so I've had that one budge a little bit. And last night was not a good look for Los Angeles. For Los Angeles 2. Oh, man, did you see the Rams game on Sunday? That stadium was empty. Maybe they both ought to be playing in a soccer stadium because it was gross. And Jared Goff ended up playing pretty well. It's still just a disaster. And the Raiders, we talked about a little bit yesterday, obviously, but just kind of a larger look at the AFC West. The Raiders and Titans were two very sexy picks in this offseason. Everybody had the Titans winning the AFC South. Everybody had the Raiders winning the AFC West, or at least getting a wild card spot. Neither one of them looked particularly good. It's hard to judge exactly where it was one team looking good or one team looking bad, vice versa. But I don't buy the Raiders' defense. I think the Titans' offense was just putting up some really weak results and making the Raiders' defense look more competent than it actually is. I think the Raiders' offense, as I've said over and over, is exquisitely beatable. Confident in that still. The Raiders are a very beatable team. I still think that the most sure loss on the Chiefs' schedule this year is at Oakland on Thursday night. If you just look at the trends, you look at the metrics of how NFL teams who have to go on the road for Thursday night game play, going from playing the Steelers to then 4 days later going to Oakland to play a division rival that's a good football team, I have very little optimism about that particular game. With that being said, I think the Chiefs are the better team. I said that on Thursday, before the Chiefs game. I think they're the better team. I think the Raiders are still the second best team in this division. And I'm for now, I think, tempted to stick to my guns of going Chiefs, Raiders, Chargers, Broncos. That's how I had it before the season. I'm not gonna freak out with these results. But the Chargers looked a little overhyped. And the Broncos looked a little better than I thought they would be. So I do still think, though, for sure, there are two tiers to this division. Maybe you think there are three if you believe the Chiefs actually have a step above where the Raiders are. I think at this point, it's Chiefs, Raiders, Chargers, Broncos. Clear drop-off for those bottom two teams. And a clear drop-off for those bottom two teams does not mean a couple of 6-10, 5-11 teams. Just a couple of teams that aren't going to be able to hang with two very good teams above them. A couple of Chiefs things I wanted to talk about today also, starting with Kareem Hunt, who's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, had the best debut of any of these tremendous rookie running backs. This year's going to have Kareem Hunt, Leonard Fournette, Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey. There is a murderer's row of young running backs joining the league this year. And of all those guys, Kareem Hunt not only had the best performance, he had the most high-profile performance. Dalvin Cook was out there on Monday Night Football, but not as sexy a game as Chiefs-Patriots, to be sure. And Dalvin Cook didn't have nearly as good of a performance. Excuse me. Leonard Fournette is the highest pick. He's kind of one of the... I would say that he and McCaffrey are the two most talked-about guys, or they were, at least. He's going to be a very good... actually powerful running back, kind of in the Ezekiel Elliott mold, I would say. Christian McCaffrey is going to catch a lot of passes. And he's white, so he has that going for him. He'll eventually be on the cover of Madden side-by-side with Peyton Hillis. You had to have heard Sports Sunday for any of that to have made sense. We spent a long time on Sunday talking about how Peyton Hillis only made the Madden cover because he's white, and that's just 100% true. And I will not hear anything. I will not hear any argument to the contrary. Trying to think of a comparable running back to Peyton Hillis who was never on the cover of Madden. Like, Brandon Jennings comes to mind. Is that weird? He was a very powerful dude. Now I'm making sure I'm not just saying the wrong... No. Not Brandon Jennings. Yeah, that's a basketball player. Who was the running back for the Giants? I said Brandon Jennings, and that's just not it. Someone right now is yelling at their phone. I made the guy who played for the Knicks and the Pistons running back in the NFL. Oh, this is infuriating.
Jacobs?
Brandon Jacobs. Thank you. Good contribution, Charlie. I don't know why I made him Brandon Jennings. Yeah. Yeah, Brandon Jacobs was the guy that I was thinking.
So Tom Brady's on the cover this year.
Oh no, quarterbacks.
How did he get that?
Just get it. Quarterbacks get to the cover all the time. But the novelty of a white running back on a fan vote, by the way, that was a fan vote for Peyton Hillis' year. The novelty of that absolutely helps. So he played for the Browns. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, he wasn't really that good.
Isaiah Crowell is not going to get on the cover. All right, hold on. We're going to do this really quick.
So did Tom Brady get caught by the Madden cover curse on Thursday?
I haven't been willing to sign up for that theory yet. If he looks like he did all year, if he looks like he did on Thursday all year long, then I will be willing to say, oh, yes, something has gone very, very wrong. So Peyton Hillis, his best season, he had 270 carries for 1,177 yards, 11 touchdowns. He averaged 73 yards per game, 4.4 yards per attempt. He's fine. He had a nice season. But he just came out of nowhere in 2010. Peyton Hillis, please. All right, how do we get there? How did we get... Oh, rookie running backs. I had a great... Kareem Hunt point. So he's on the cover of SI. He's a part of this amazing crop of rookie running backs. And I think one of the knocks on Kareem Hunt, one of the concerns that I heard a lot going into Thursday and have not heard one time since then, is, oh man, do the Chiefs have a power running back? Do they have a north-south running back? Heard this complaint before Thursday. Not at all since. Here's why we didn't hear it since then. Saw this tweet from Brandon Kiley. Kareem Hunt was the most efficient north-south running back in the NFL in week one. Now, this is an advanced metric thing, but essentially rating how much of his movement was going down the field, not side to side. Kareem Hunt, and I said this before the season, in rebuttal to the idea that the Chiefs needed to go sign essentially Peyton Hillis. Kareem Hunt is not a dancing running back. He moves more like Le'Veon Bell than he does like... I'm trying to think. I mean, maybe go ahead and just pivot over to DeAnthony Thomas. You think of DeAnthony Thomas as a running back, which I know this is kind of an ugly comparison. It doesn't really translate that well, but give it to me for this comparison. DeAnthony Thomas moves side to side. He's trying to find gaps and then tries to sprint through them. Kareem Hunt is a very forward runner. He moves downfield. He finds creases, and that's all he needs. He doesn't need these giant gaps to go drive a truck through. He finds creases. He breaks through them, makes people miss, stays on his feet, and moves vertically. I do wish the Chiefs still had Spencer Ware on this team so you could give Kareem Hunt a break with someone that you trusted. But CJ Spiller is back now, so it'll be Spiller and Kendrick West. Those will be the guys that are spelling him from here on out. But still, that being said, none of those guys, and I'm telling you now, no one who's currently available or has been available for a good long while would deserve to come in to replace Kareem Hunt in goal line situations, in third and two situations. He's patient, he makes people miss, and if he hits a crease, as he put it in a post-game interview, if he gets a crease, he's going to pick up the yardage. And I think that north-south efficiency is something that is lost in most analysis of what Kareem Hunt can do. He's also currently leading Pro Football Focus's race for Rookie of the Year, and rightfully so. There isn't an obvious potential quarterback Rookie of the Year in play. Deshaun Kaiser, now Deshaun Watson's probably going to start 15 games. We will talk about Bill O'Brien again today out of just pure rage, because Bill O'Brien is a disaster. And I hate what he's going to do to Deshaun Watson. But Deshaun Kaiser is probably going to start 16 games, barring injury. He's out there. But if Kareem Hunt is even just the third most efficient option in this Chiefs offense, I think he likely will win Rookie of the Year. And so I am in for that. He also he forced more missed tackles than any other back in week one with 8. That was beating literally everyone, but like Ezekiel Elliott, I think, was second. Jonathan Stewart was on the list pretty highly. Leonard Fournette, he beat. Obviously, he beat everybody. That's what it means to have the most. But I know we talked about him a lot on Friday. We talked about him again yesterday. But I think at this point, we are in more danger of undervaluing Kareem Hunt this season than we are of overvaluing him, which I think is also kind of amazing. But I think it's where we're at right now.
Kareem Hunt is also on the better team than all the other rookie running backs.
That helped Ezekiel Elliott a ton last year.
Exactly. Leonard Fournette, Jacksonville, they looked great in the first game, but that was against Houston, and that probably will not last.
Mm-hmm.
Dalvin Cook, the Vikings are decent, but the Chiefs are definitely better.
They're a good team. I wouldn't sleep on the Vikings. I wasn't sleeping on the Vikings.
And then I guess you could put Christian McCaffrey in that, too. Panthers.
A bunch of those guys are in pretty good situations. I think Kareem Hunt is certainly in the most imaginative offense. So even if you want to put those guys on equal footing, like Christian McCaffrey has the better quarterback, but I don't know if I think at this point I would take Tyreek Hill over Kelvin Benjamin. I would take Travis Kelce over Greg Olsen. The same can be said for Tyreek Hill over Diggs or Adam, the little white guy. And whoever the tight end is in Minnesota.
Rudolph.
Kyle Rudolph. Good pull. I could not think of who it even would have been.
He's on my fantasy team.
Nice. So I think that I would say this. Kareem Hunt is surrounded by the best weapons of all of the rookie running backs, to be sure. The Jags had a little bit of an argument to be made, but they have a terrible, terrible, terrible trash quarterback who is in this league. I would love to see a Jags offense with Colin Kaepernick. I might just say that one time a show until he's on a team. We'll never have to watch Scott bleeping Tolzien, Blake bleeping Bortles, Tom bleeping Savage. It's infuriating. All right, whenever we come back, we're going to talk about either Tyreek Hill or Bill O'Brien trying to ruin his franchise and his franchise quarterback, whichever one really, really gets my goat more during this commercial break.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Tom Brady, the best quarterback I've ever seen, who is, by the way, 40, in case you didn't hear that on the on the telecast last night.
Oh, is he?
With Joshua Briscoe.
Yeah, he is, in fact, 40. Brock Osweiler is tall. Oh, Tom Brady is 40. And Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard, just in case any of those things. And the Chiefs didn't throw a touchdown to a wide receiver a few years ago.
Tony Romo's hurt. Did you hear?
Tony Romo's back is hurt. Also, Colin Kaepernick is unemployed, but Blake Bortles is not.
On ESPN Kansas City.
I see what you're doing here, Charlie. I get it. I get it. Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City, 15:10 a.m. on AM3FM, 15:10.com. Search ESPN 15:10 TuneIn app. Maybe on Facebook Live next hour. We'll see. U2 is playing at Arrowhead tonight. My parents are going. I'm not. I'm going to go babysit, essentially, my siblings. Keep them from bringing the house down. I'll probably be on Twitter.
So you could burn the house down.
Yeah. I'm going to burn Twitter down.
Oh.
Also, last night, we also sort of started burning Twitter down. This is not what I was planning on talking about whenever we came back, but maybe we'll just do this now. Maybe we'll save it. Maybe we'll do it now. Maybe we'll save it. People want to boo Jamal Charles whenever he comes back to Kansas City. And I think that's a ridiculous thing to do. We'll talk about that coming up. I want to talk about Tyreek Hill. Let's do that. I told you to talk about Kareem Hunt and Tyreek Hill and their value and what we're still missing on them. There's another interesting stat from Tyreek Hill that came out this week. He and Kareem Hunt were the two fastest players in football. They have the two fastest, I think, measured speeds this entire week of football. Hunt was actually one. Hill was two. Number three, Jeremy Maclin, who I would actually still love to be on this team. He would be the fourth option on this offense, and that would be great. Then Chris Conley would be fifth, and eventually, guys, someone's going to get hurt. Whenever that happens, I will tweet you a Jeremy Maclin gif. And go, wouldn't that have been nice? Maclin had a nice day on Sunday. But the three fastest people on this opening week of the NFL were Kareem Hunt, and then Tyreek Hill, and then Jeremy Maclin. A guy who is slow and injured and old and can't play anymore. Anyway. I think we're all kind of collectively getting where we need to be with Tyreek Hill in this number one wide receiver debate. The third preseason game where he dropped a couple passes, my mentions were a disaster zone of people who only know how to watch something and then immediately react and have no concept for what else they've seen, which is just sort of how it goes sometimes. But Tyreek Hill had the highest quarterback rating to wide receiver connection of week one, excluding Monday night's games. Pro Football Focus put out these stats before Monday night's games, unless Bradford to Adam the white guy, unless that was a better connection, I would be very surprised because this one's virtually perfect. That might be in the conversation now. But they put up the top five, and I think it's funny and interesting. Alex Smith to Tyreek Hill was the best quarterback to receiver connection of week one, excluding Monday night's games. Still probably better than Monday night's games. Alex Smith, listen to this. Alex Smith had a 158.3 rating when going to Tyreek Hill, putting their connection above Carson Wentz to Nelson Aguilar, Aaron Rodgers to Jordy Nelson, Ben Roethlisberger to Antonio Brown, and Aaron Rodgers to Randall Cobb. That's the company who they beat. Why does this matter? Why is this important? Because he wasn't just running down the sidelines waiting for heaved passes that he could make a play on. Although I don't mind using him that way. But Tyreek Hill was all over this offense. He caught seven receptions for 133 yards and that touchdown. And he really only had the one big play, but he had a lot of very good plays. In fact, Brian Baldinger on Twitter has been putting out a bunch of really good breakdowns of Andy Reid scheming and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Kareem Hunt. He had a couple with Kelce and Hill just showing these how they're these incredible chess pieces that Andy Reid gets to use in his game. And the way that the offense is being used around Tyreek Hill and the way that Tyreek Hill is being used in this offense is so interesting and so encouraging. This is what Andy Reid needs, I think, to lift this offense scheme-wise to another level. There's so many moving pieces, and he is scheming Hill open as a number one wide receiver. Now, if I remember correctly, the only even pass thrown to Tyreek Hill over like 15 or 20 yards on Thursday night was the deep touchdown where he was wide open in a huge, huge patch of grass, which again is not to demean the throw. Some people get very sensitive about this stuff. The throw was perfect. But Tyreek Hill was wide open on that touchdown. Disgustingly. The Chiefs need more of that from Tyreek Hill. He needs to be used even more so as a deep threat. But he will also be used in your typical number one receiver type of ways. His usage might be in a more Antonio Brown market.
But I think his skill set is still DeSean Jackson, T.Y. Hilton, those type of guys, but actually faster than all of them. Something to keep an eye on, something to be encouraged by. I don't think there's a debate anymore about what Tyreek Hill can be. I've been saying since November that he reminds me of the DeSean Jackson types. I've been saying all preseason that he would be used correctly by Andy Reid if Alex Smith will get the ball there, and that the offense will be revitalized if Alex Smith does get the ball there. Been saying that all preseason, and I'm optimistic now. Again, he wasn't targeted by Alex Smith deep, except for when he was wide open. And that still concerns me. I do still want to see Alex Smith be more willing to go to him whenever there is some coverage. And it's not just Tyreek Hill in a 45-yard space of empty patch of grass. But I think this offense is absolutely moving in the right direction because of that. And again, the biggest thing here, and really, most teams are going to struggle to stop Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill. I would say that most teams will really limit one of them, or at least really try to limit one of them. But with the Patriots, I expected both of those guys to be very well accounted for. Kelce, more so. Hill, if they would have just not had that one big busted coverage, would have been... He would have been held to, what, 6 for 60? Something like that. It was like a 75-yard touchdown. He had 133 yards. Yeah, something like that. He would have had like a 6-for-60 game if that pass doesn't make it. Now, obviously, that pass made it. I'm not trying to live in some fantasy world where worse things happen to the Chiefs. But the Patriots did a pretty good job of accounting for Tyreek Hill minus one play. And Travis Kelce was largely a non-factor. But Kareem Hunt busts it all open. The importance of having three guys, especially whenever you're playing playoff-caliber teams in playoff-type situations, that's whenever you take the next step. It's also why, again, I still hate that the Chiefs don't have Jeremy Maclin. It's another weapon. Another guy to work with. Another guy for Andy Reid to work with. Another weapon to use in injury situations. Another guy to have on the field you have to account for. I have more faith in Jeremy Maclin than Chris Conley. And I have more faith in Chris Conley than DeMarcus Robinson. Barely. But I'm as optimistic about the Chiefs' offense as you can be, I think. I definitely am still worrying about sort of seeing it again from Alex Smith. I'm gonna be talking and asking and wondering about that. I mean, for probably the first like 8 weeks, unless it goes well every game. And now teams are going to account for Kareem Hunt much more fervently. I don't think the Patriots were surprised by him being good, but I think they simply got beat by him. Teams aren't going to be beaten by Kareem Hunt quite so easily the rest of this season. Quite so dominatingly, you could say. But if they're going to slow him down, it's going to open up Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, the other guys on this offense. When you have three weapons you can go to, you are going to create such a hectic atmosphere for any defense. And now I do think that going forward, I think the most likely thing is that that defenses will want to challenge Alex Smith the most. So they'll say, we're going to limit Hunt and Kelce as much as we can, beat us with Tyreek Hill. Because I think that's the thing that Alex Smith is most uncomfortable doing, is throwing the deep ball to the guy that's slightly covered. I think it'll work. I think Smith will win those battles often enough for this team to win a lot of football games. But I do think that if defenses have their choice,
They'll say, beat us deep with Tyreek Hill. We'll keep everything else in front of us. And it's gonna test Alex Smith. And that's still going to be, I think, how the season is largely decided. Is how does that transition work? How does that usage move? And I think the Chiefs are going to keep finding the ways to exploit what the defenses give them. Did you guys see what happened on that interception that Ben Roethlisberger threw? He threw a pick, and then the Browns guy popped up and blocked him and knocked him over. He just shoved him over. And then Roethlisberger, got up, to his knees and then grabbed the Browns player by the ankle and just, rolled around. It reminded me of how an alligator or a crocodile does, the death roll. It clamps onto its prey and then just sort of, does a barrel roll, breaks its neck or whatever. Or severs its spine or something. I don't know, something gruesome and grisly. That's what it reminded me of. And it's funny, you cannot hit quarterbacks low. In fact, I thought there was a chance the defender might have been penalized for simply blocking Ben Roethlisberger. But the NFL's got to be better about that, right? You can't let your quarterbacks be so manicured and then have them go after the ankle of a defender like a crocodile in a death spiral. You can't let that happen. Are we on Facebook now, Charlie? No, we're not. Okay, we're set up. So next segment will be live on Facebook again. Great. Very exciting. I hate Bill O'Brien so much. He's gonna ruin Deshaun Watson. All right, let's talk about this
real
quick.
His chin.
He and his chin with a big old hole in it. Let's talk about Bill O'Brien. If I sound disgusted, it's because I am. We talked about this some yesterday, so I'm only gonna rehash this a tiny bit. But it's complete malpractice to start. Charlie is just, I don't know how else to say this, fingering his chin? Just poking kneading his chin muscle around?
Just trying to, get the full Bill O'Brien thing going.
Yeah,
here, so
I don't.
You can kind of visualize that.
I didn't like what you were doing at all. What Bill O'Brien looks like happened, actually, it looks like he took a BB. Like a BB gun pellet into his chin and just sort of caved in infinitely.
Don't shoot me in the face with a BB gun, please.
I'd love to. I might. I will. When you least expect it. Anyway. Said yesterday, Bill O'Brien did an absolutely absurd thing by starting Tom Savage in week 1 and then putting Deshaun Watson in at halftime. Halftime! You can't do that! Either start your rookie quarterback and let him prepare for the game as the starting quarterback, which is what the Browns are doing with Deshaun Kizer, or sit him and let him learn from the bench, which is what the Chiefs are doing with Patrick Mahomes. Do not be the middle ground. The Bears went and signed Mike Glennon. And Mitch Trubisky's going to just sit behind him while Mike Glennon plays. Fine. Fine. They give up a lot to go get Trubisky. They're paying big money to Mike Glennon. They seem to have at least the illusion of a plan. The Chiefs already had it. Alex Smith paid a big draft and big money in draft picks to go get Patrick Mahomes. They have a plan. The Texans are doing such a disservice to Deshaun Watson. And I bring this up today again only because Bill O'Brien didn't name a starter today. They play on Thursday. They play a game in 2 days. It's absurd. Watson was getting first-team reps apparently at practice. But today, Bill O'Brien publicly refused to name a starting quarterback for the game they're playing on Thursday. Also, C.J. Fedorowicz, their best tight end, is on IR now. All three of their tight ends ended up in the concussion protocol after Sunday's game, along with two other Texans, and unfortunately, not Bill O'Brien. He should also be in the protocol because he must have, like Looney Tunes style, he had an anvil dropped on his head at some point this offseason. It's the only explanation for how ridiculously he's managed this situation. And I also, I am self-aware. I know that I spent this entire offseason talking about Patrick Mahomes and putting out ideas for plans to have the best possible plan for the best possible future of Pat Mahomes. I know how I did that. And somebody's going, well, you wanted Patrick Mahomes. You hate Alex Smith. You want Patrick Mahomes to play every minute. Why don't you want Deshaun Watson to play? Not like this. And he was so fragilely confident in Tom Savage that he showed him one bad half. And went, oh, you know what? Actually, Tom Savage is not good. I just realized this after being a head coach in this league for years and knowing football my whole life and also having Tom Savage in training camp. It's ridiculous. It's so upsetting. Have a plan. Roll with it. If you want to switch to your rookie developmental guy at the bye week, totally makes sense. If you want to switch to him on a long week, totally makes sense. Deshaun Watson should be starting in week 3. They'll have 10 days to prep him for whatever that game is. The fact that Bill O'Brien rolled out Tom Savage for a half of football, and then is going to make Deshaun Watson, in all likelihood, the starting quarterback with like one day to actually be prepared as a starting quarterback, is so fully asinine. He had to know. He had to know that you give a guy a whole offseason to prepare, and those first 2 weeks at least, your starting quarterback is the same freaking dude that you rolled out there to the beginning. He's got to start opening night and play that game. He's got to play that Thursday night game. Obviously, there is no other option here. Ridiculous. I hate you, Bill O'Brien.
It's Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
We all have things in this life we can't fully explain. What's the purpose of life? Is there a God? And why did the Chiefs cut Jeremy Maclin?
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Got about 5 minutes left in this hour. Whenever we come back, the 5 o'clock hour, we'll be live on Facebook. Got to figure it out. Good work, Charlie. I don't know how Bill O'Brien's the NFL head coach. Somebody asked me how long I thought it would be before he got fired, and I said about 6 months too late. That's going to be the thing. Like, Deshaun Watson's going to look terrible. He's going to get absolutely slaughtered behind that offensive line. And he's going to get his first start with like a day as the actual starter. Can't wait. Also, the Colts are torpedoing themselves by not playing Colin Kaepernick. We've been there yesterday. They're probably going to start Jacoby Brissett soon, a guy who's been in the offense for like a week or two. Colin Kaepernick would have had to have learned a new offense. So did Jacoby Brissett. Also, Brissett cost him Philip Dorsett. Brissett for Dorsett. Chad tweeted in, and with a couple other takeaways from the game last night. So the Chargers played scared for 3.5 quarters. Simeon played better than expected. Denver's defense looks weaker. I agree with all three of those points. For 3.5 quarters, Philip Rivers, Freudian slip there, but it makes sense. Philip Rivers played like the most scared quarterback in the AFC West. Philip Rivers, for 3.5 quarters, was the most timid deep ball thrower in the division, which is insane. The offensive line wasn't doing much for him, to be honest, but still. Simeon looked good. He had the near pick six early in the game, early-ish in the game, and then the interception actually later. So he still very much has his flaws that I'm not afraid of. But he looked competent, which is I think more than I expected from Trevor Siemian. And yeah, as we talked about this before the season, before the game, several points. Denver's defense is not as good as it was in years past. They still have Von Miller though, who is a terrifying man. He had that one play where he looked like he was just holding down the turbo button. Like, he's had some sort of gear that was not allowed for anyone else on the planet. It was incredible. Which reminds me about D. Ford. There was something on Twitter. I can't remember. I think it was Matt Stagner, and then Seth Kaiser retweeted it and talking about it. D. Ford is so incompetent against the run. Sometimes he looks like he shot out of a cannon whenever he's rushing the passer. But much more frequently, he looks like a disaster on run defense. And it's just, it's hard to wrap your head around, frankly. I don't even know how to put all those pieces together. He's been in this league for too long to be incompetent against the run. Whenever the ball gets run right at Justin Houston, he shuts it down. He's one of the best in the league in that position at just ending a run in his direction. Either by taking on a blocker and cleaning it all up or messing it all up, or if it's him getting back behind somebody and cleaning it all up. He is a force. D. Ford is one of those spinning glass doors that only seem to exist like hotels and airports. It's a mess. And so somebody, I think it was Matt, was saying that Tanner Pastrnak didn't get any snaps on defense on Thursday, but he was wondering if he might see the field in some more obvious running situations in the future because he's 290 pounds. So it would make sense for him to get a shot at obvious run defending downs. And I'm all on board with that. I think D. Ford has more to give as a pass rusher right now. Pastrnak has a lot of refining to do. Not necessarily in the run defense. D. Ford also has a lot of work to do when it comes to stopping the run. A lot of work. He's had a lot of work for years. Never really gets better. So I'm on board with that. Not shot in the dark. I think the Chiefs know what Tanner Pastrnak is. But I'm on board with that sort of experiment of giving him some time to try to blow up some runs, to try to get in some obvious running situations, and maybe even let him get after the quarterback a little bit. We also, by the way, we don't have a show here on Friday, so Thursday we will be doing all of the previewing for Chiefs-Eagles, and getting to Carson Wentz is going to be a big part of that game. He looked pretty good this week. He looked pretty good for most of last season. Doug Peterson, former offensive coordinator for Andy Reid, now the head coach in Philly. A lot of good storylines, and we'll start talking about all of that tomorrow, to be sure, but we will get fully into it on Thursday to get you ready for that game. Whenever we come back, though, we'll be on Facebook, which is very exciting. But whenever we come back, I want to talk about the conversations I got into on Twitter last night. As Jamaal Charles was making his debut for the Broncos, there were a lot of Chiefs fans very upset with that whole situation. I think you should be cheering for him, but I'll explain that whenever we come back here. I'm on Almost Entirely Sports.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
The phone number here is 913-491-8255.
With Joshua Briscoe.
For people who only think in Chiefs jersey numbers, it's 913-Tyler-Thigpen, Tom Bahali, Dwayne Bowe, D. Ford.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome to the show for the first time if you're just joining us. We got a full slate of very interesting topics for this hour. Let's start with something really quickly that's just gonna blow your mind. So I was on Twitter last night, and it just, I hadn't ever considered this, and I'm gonna draw this for the Facebook Live audience. We're now back up on Facebook Live. I'm drawing this for you. If you're not on Facebook Live, use your imagination or look at your keyboard, or just you should know what this looks like. You know the division sign? Like the mathematical sign for dividing something? It's the two dots on top of each other with a horizontal line in the middle. Is this illustration coming through in the video, Charlie? No, that was totally worthless. How about now? You know what a division sign looks like. You're an adult. You could be a child. You should know what a division sign looks like. Look at the division sign. Think about it. Focus on that in your head right now. Are you with me, Charlie? Charlie's on a different planet. I need land on Earth. Damn you. Land on the planet.
I'm testing the audio over a Facebook Live video.
Focus on the division symbol in your head.
Got it.
It's just a... The symbol is a fraction with dots in place of the numerator and the denominator. Charlie, how is your head still on your shoulders? You weren't listening. Listen, I just explicitly asked you to listen to this. Because I need to know how you respond to it. The division sign is just a division, it's just a fraction, an act of division, with a dot in place of the numerator and the denominator. Did you know that already?
I didn't, but I get. Is that really the origin of the division symbol?
I don't know. It was blowing up on Twitter last night, and it blew my mind. I told my dad. My dad's head exploded. Rest in peace. There was mass hysteria. I couldn't believe it. Because you just put, like, okay, 34 over 2. It's just a fraction.
It's amazing.
I can't look at it the same way again. Because instead of seeing it as that, like, neat little symbol, I just see it as a fraction with dots in place of the numbers. Blew my mind.
Now, what's a dot but divided by a dot? It's the next question.
Don't be stupid. It's very clearly two multiplication equations in a fraction. So it's like 3, now it's like 3 times 4 and 1 times 2. It makes it even more ridiculous, more psychotic. I could not believe that. Also, do you know why an ampersand is called an ampersand? It's shorthand for and per se and, which is saying like and in and of itself. I don't know why the little symbol is the way it is. But at one point, I learned how to draw it just because I figured I should be able to. But yeah, it's that was very bad. I drew it and it went very poorly, but I can at least kind of get there.
One of my English teachers in college took like 5 minutes one time to explain how much she hated the ampersand, and that if we ever used it in any way, she would not really give us an F, but she did threaten that.
Well, it does. It's definitely not like...
I don't know how you feel about using the ampersand.
It's definitely not like AP style. Like, you definitely shouldn't use it unless it's a part of, like, an actual proper noun, like a law firm or whatever, if that's a part of, like, their stylization. But why did she hate it?
I don't know. She just they said there's so many other ways to say and.
But
and
so
many
the
other
thing.
More proper ways to use it. And
here's
you also
the thing,
use
though.
The comma before the and when you use three.
No Oxford comma.
Yeah,
no
like
Oxford
either,
commas.
So. I question
again,
her.
Again, AP style.
Yeah.
I've got journalism in my bones. AP style says no Oxford comma. Keep your... Man, you're just using up extra characters. Now listen, if you're in a tweet and you want to use the ampersand, I'm with it. But in general, we're living in a 140 character per statement world. Manage your characters better. Get that extra comma out of there. You need that. You need to properly punctuate in other places. Yeah, so I saw the division sign thing last night, and I freaked out. I just screamed at the top of my lungs for 45 minutes straight. I had so many lozenges.
Were your roommates worried about you?
I was at my parents' house. And so, they knew that was normal. They expect that. Trying to think of what the next thing I could discover would be. That would just launch me another fit of hysteria. It blew my mind. I wanted to share that with you. I came into today. I did some show prep at home because I'm not a, and I got here early today to work on stuff. I'm not a slug. But when I went to bed last night, I had three things on my little like rundown for today, and it was just Broncos Chargers, Ted Cruz's Twitter, division sign. This is a 3-hour show. What am I doing? Although I did think about this, my weekend went well because, oh man, this is going to be a part of the Chiefs podcast because it's going to be about Jamal Charles getting booed a little bit. There are some Chiefs fans listening right now, so mad at me. But I this weekend went well for me, or this week or whatever, because I generally go into an NFL, not even Sunday anymore. But I went into this whole NFL weekend, long weekend, with the goals of the Chiefs winning, me winning all of my fantasy matchups, and not getting fired for saying anything like obscene on the radio. And I accomplished all three of those things. 4-0 in fantasy, Chiefs beat the Patriots, I haven't cursed on the radio. What would have been hilarious would have been if I would have said, like, I'm so bleeping proud of how this has gone.
I was waiting for it.
And also, then you would have like had to dump it and go to break or whatever. Would have been funny. All right. We're going to talk about Ted Cruz's Twitter next second. This is so great. Well, here's your vegetables first. Last night, I tweeted that I was conflicted about what I wanted from that game. Because I openly want Jamal Charles to do well. I think it was better for the Chiefs last night for the Broncos to win, because I think the Chargers have a little higher ceiling. And also just the home team winning their own game is a little easier to balance out long term. And I hate the Broncos. Those are my three things. Those are my things that I was dealing with last night. And so later on, I ended up tweeting, I miss Jamal. You guys had better applaud him when he comes back to Arrowhead. And there was a ton of venom in the response to that. Now, some people were on the same page. But I'm largely confused. Because the main response to that was, no, he went to Denver. And yeah, of course he did. Because the Chiefs, think about this as another employment situation. The Chiefs fired him. And then the Broncos offered him employment and the job that he wanted. So he took that job. How was that offensive to you? How does that make him no longer justified to be applauded and cheered for whenever he comes back to Kansas City, a place where he spent years devoting his body to this sport that we love and the team that we love? You've got to applaud that guy. He should be able to have a good homecoming. And if he fumbles at Arrowhead later in the game, you should cheer then too. But whenever he's introduced or whatever, he should be applauded. And some of the responses to this beyond that point, are so short-sighted to me. And he said, people saying he didn't just go to Denver. He went and he trash-talked the Chiefs on the way out. He said he always wanted to play for the Broncos. And I think that is, to believe that, and to believe that as a reason that you should boo Jamal Charles whenever he comes back to Arrowhead, shows such an inability to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. Whatever industry you work in, if you were fired by your company, laid off, whatever, said, hey, we don't have room for you here, we don't want you here anymore, bye-bye. And you're like, well, what if I take less money? No, goodbye. And then your crosstown rivals, the rival paper-making company. I use an example of one of my friends who was yelling at me on Twitter. He works at Culver's. So if Culver's fired you and then Steak and Shake came over and offered you the exact job that you wanted, and then someone said, how do you feel about working for Steak and Shake? You would say, I always wanted to work for Steak and Shake. I love Steak and Shake. I've always loved Steak and Shake. Steak and Shake's manager who gave me this job is my favorite. Because of course you would say that. Of course you should. Whenever you end up at a new company, then you start talking about how much you love that company. Especially after you're fired. He didn't demand a trade. He wasn't a free agent and even refused to re-sign with the Chiefs. The Chiefs cut him. Hey, Deshaun Watson's going to start against the Bengals on Thursday. Go to hell, Bill O'Brien. That game kicks off in 48 hours. That's when you're throwing your rookie to the Wolves. God. What a dumpster. Anyway. I don't get it. I really don't. How can you look at this whole situation and think, you know what? Next time I see that guy, I'm going to boo him. I'm not going to sit on my hands. It's not like how I'm going to react whenever CJ Anderson runs out. I am so offended by what Jamal Charles did, accepting a job offer with the team that wanted to pay him and let him play football, that I'm going to boo him. It's just bizarre to me. Somebody tweeted me and said, should I applaud for my ex-wife for hooking up with my coworker? And so, first of all, like, that guy's marriage is in trouble, right? Like, you don't just ask that. Like, that guy is, like, worried. That guy 100% has a coworker that he knows is more handsome than him, who he knows is more successful, and he knows that his wife is a little bit over it right now. I wish your marriage luck. But also, your mindset is not helping. Your wife knows you're a D-bag. So he's his ex-wife, right? So I was like, well, yeah, first of all, like, if you divorced, if like you were like, hey, honey, I need a divorce. I want to end this marriage, which is what the Chiefs did to Jamal Charles. Keep in mind, you say, honey, we're through. And then she goes and finds a happy new life with your coworker. I would actually think that you should be happy for her, right? Like, you guys shared some of the best years of your life. You called it off. She's now happy with somebody else. Wouldn't you be happy for her? Is that unreasonable? Like, okay, and this is really, I am definitely aware of the fact that this might be my own experiences and my own sensibilities sort of clouding the judgment here. But if you're like, yeah, you know what, we were married for whatever, 5 years, 5 or 6 years with Jamal Charles, I guess. We were married for that's a lifetime in football. I mean, that's a 20-year marriage. We were married for 20 years, and you know what, honey? I just, this isn't what I want anymore. We're welcome to Splitsville. Split up. And your ex-wife finds this happier, greener pastures. Good for her. Good for Jamal Charles. You don't have to applaud her whenever she shows up next time, because that metaphor doesn't translate. But if you run into her on the street, you go, hey, seems like you're doing well. I'm glad that you're doing good. Thanks, Jeremy. I'm glad that you're doing well, too. You and Kareem Hunt seem very happy together. Yeah, we are. You and John Elway seem very happy together. Oh, yeah, we are. Great! Good! You're such a bitter person. That guy has to be such a bitter person. Justin. Justin is the name of it. I found his tweet. I imagine that Justin is a bitter person. And so, like, and somebody tweeted in, said, I love Chiefs Jamal. We'll never root or applaud Donk Jamal. And he must have ran out of characters for donkey. Probably because he had too many damn Oxford commas. When he retires, I will pull his jersey out of storage. I'm okay with that. I guess somebody else said, I won't applaud a Bronco. I won't boo him, though, either. He has a right to play football, and Denver gave him the chance we didn't. That's fine, I guess. I also think it's kind of small. Like your team, as a Chiefs fan, your team called off the relationship. Whenever he comes back to Arrowhead, I hope he gets applauded. I would love for the fans in the stadium to say, hey, we in this moment are recognizing everything that you did for this franchise, for this team. We're recognizing your greatness. And it can, you don't have to cheer for him whenever he gets the ball. You don't have to suddenly switch team alliances, but whenever he, the person, runs out of the tunnel, or he gets introduced or whatever, or whenever, maybe it's his first carry, I don't know, however that would work. Whenever he checks into the game, I think that it's an incredibly decent thing to go, yeah, you know what? Last time this guy was in the stadium, he was giving his knees to this team, his body to this team, and playing like a potential Hall of Famer. I don't know. I don't totally get it. And there's a lot of that on Twitter. Can't do it. In an orange jersey, you're dreaming. He'll get his applause after he retires and he's in the Ring of Honor. But those are a bunch of fans who would genuinely, I think, say, you know what? I wish that he would have just retired and not played another year of football, and then we could have just applauded him in the Ring of Honor. All right, so, I mean, it's... And now, listen, there's probably a larger conversation to be had here about, like, the condition of sports fandom or something. But you definitely don't actually care about that person. You just care about the team. And I'd like to think there's a little bit of a give and take there. Like, whenever Alex Smith is... If he finishes his career on some other team, I would want Alex Smith to play well. I wanted Tony Gonzalez to do well in Atlanta. I wanted him to win a Super Bowl. And I know that the difference is Denver. I know that's the turning point. But it just seems, it makes it seem kind of shallow. I don't know. If you have any thoughts on it, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe. You can comment on the Facebook Live video. I know the Facebook video looks like it's being shot by a potato. It's because it kind of is. It's just an old webcam. Which, by the way, Charlie, should be pivoted. I'm looking at the video right now. Should be pivoted more this way. Look at me. This way. I think. There's a lot of space over here. Yeah. I think I hasn't changed yet on what I'm looking at, but I'm behind. You can comment on the Facebook Live stream. You can tweet me. You can call the show if you want. 913-491-8255. 913-491-8255. 913. Tyler Thigpen, Tom Bahali, Dwayne Bowe, D. Ford. I'm looking at the video now. Oh, hold on. Yeah, all right. Good work, Charlie. That worked. I think it's a really silly kind of like small thing to get out of shape about. David tweeted in and said, "People who hold on to that hate have sad little lives," and I think that's accurate. Yeah, the Supreme Court allows Donald Trump's administration to continue ban on most refugees. Perfect. All right, whenever we come back, we're going to talk about Ted Cruz's Twitter, because that's where we're obviously going to go right now.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.